Brought to you by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis. This edition highlights key LinkedIn posts on social selling in weeks 25 and 26. Frenis supports clients with identifying target attendees for events, crafting outreach that cuts through the noise, and driving qualified registrations through strategic LinkedIn engagement. You can find more info in the description. So imagine spending hours, right, just crafting the perfect B2B post on your company page.
Yeah.
You get approval from legal, you polish the graphic, hit publish, and then, well, you realize the algorithm basically considers it invisible.
Yeah, totally invisible.
Right. So what if, like, everything we know about LinkedIn marketing right now is just completely backward?
Well, looking at the stack of data we've got for today's deep dive, I mean, that's exactly what's happening. If you pull apart the insights from just these last 2 weeks, a really urgent narrative emerges.
Urgently shifting away from the old ways, yeah.
Exactly. B2B LinkedIn it's no longer just a corporate publishing channel. The platform has totally rewired itself into this highly strategic, you know, human-led revenue operating system.
A revenue operating system.
Uh-huh.
I love that framing.
Yeah.
So today, we're going to break down how you can stop posting into the void and start engineering actual pipeline.
Which is what everyone actually wants, right?
Yeah, exactly. But before you can, you know, advocate or sell on this platform, you have to have a foundation.
Mm.
And a lot of professionals, they still treat their LinkedIn profile as a digital CV.
Oh, completely. Just a timeline of past jobs.
Right. But Deepika K and Fizan Ahmad have been super vocal lately about why this mindset is just killing conversion rates. Mm-hmm. Your profile is not a resume.
No, not at all.
It has to function as a sales machine.
Yeah, and Fizan laid out the mechanics of this beautifully. He sees people just obsessing over profile views, like as if that metric actually pays the bills.
Right. I got 1,000 views this week.
Exactly. But a profile view is literally just a curious click. It means nothing if a visitor lands there and finds zero conversion path. Like, the fatal flaw most people make is focusing entirely on their job title. They just boldly proclaim, you know, I'm an account executive at XYZ Corp.
Which means absolutely nothing to a buyer, like zero.
Right.
Buyers are looking for solutions to specific problems, not, you know, your HR designation. I always think of it like an analogy. Treat your profile like a storefront on a really busy digital street.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. And Fizan is basically saying, most people just put a bunch of mannequins in the window, and that's your resume, your past job titles. But there's no door.
No way to get in.
Exactly. No cash register, no clear instructions on how to actually do business with you. So if a buyer can't figure out how to walk inside, they just keep walking.
Then they keep walking fast, too. Jarek Gray and Rion Rezo both chimed in on this specific dynamic, and they argued that you have to make what you do idiot-proof, like within 3 seconds.
3 seconds, that's it.
That is the entire cognitive window you have before a buyer just bounces. If they have to scroll down to your experience section just to figure out who you help, you've already lost them.
Wow, but structurally there's actually a hard-coded reason for that 3-second rule, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Jonathan Levy shared this fascinating data on how the platform's search engine parses your profile. LinkedIn's algorithm actually indexes your headline at 5 times the weight of any other field on your profile.
5 times. That is massive.
Right. So every single character in that headline is a high-value keyword opportunity to rank for your ideal buyer.
So it acts as this primary signal to the search architecture.
Exactly. But here's the wild part. We aren't just optimizing for LinkedIn's internal search anymore. Jeffrey Schroeder broke down this massive new study from Meltwater that analyzed 9.5 million B2B citations inside AI engines like ChatGPT and Claude.
Okay.
And LinkedIn is now the second most cited B2B source for AI answers globally.
Wait, really? The second most cited globally?
Globally. The AI platforms are literally treating LinkedIn as a primary source of truth now.
That is insane.
Yeah, and the critical detail in Schroeder's breakdown is where the citations actually originate. 75% of them come from individual personal profiles answering specific questions.
Not the company pages.
No. Not from polished corporate company pages at all. The AI models are bypassing all that corporate fluff and pulling direct insights from human beings.
Okay, wait, I have to pause and push back on that a little bit, though.
Go for it.
Because if you're a seller or a founder listening to this deep dive right now, how on earth do you balance that? Like, you're writing for a web scraper that's hunting for data, but you still need to write for a human buyer who needs to feel, you know, an emotional connection.
Right. You don't want to sound like a machine.
Exactly. It feels like the fastest route to producing just robotic, keyword stuffed SEO trash.
Yeah, that is the paradox most marketers fear, honestly. But the reality is actually the exact opposite, because AI engines like Claude, they aren't scraping for generic keywords anymore. They're scraping for deep, specific expertise.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Schroeder noted that the posts getting heavily cited are usually highly vulnerable. It's like a sales leader dissecting a demo they completely botched, or a customer success executive breaking down an onboarding failure.
Real-world scar tissue, basically.
Oh, exactly. Scar tissue. The AI wants specific answers to specific niche questions, so writing deeply human, hyper-specific content is actually the ultimate SEO hack for these language models.
Authenticity as an algorithmic advantage. I love that. And, you know, speaking of authenticity, Jason Logg threw out a really sharp warning about faking it.
Oh, the AI images.
Yes, he zeroed in on those hyper-realistic AI-generated images people keep attaching to their posts. You know, the glowing neon handshakes or, like, the perfect robots in suits.
So cheesy.
So cheesy. And he argues it actively destroys your credibility.
Well, the psychology behind that is brutal, but it's totally true.
Yeah.
When a buyer scrolls past an AI-generated image, their brain just registers a lack of effort.
Right, like you didn't even try.
Exactly. The perceived value of that content just drops to zero instantly.
Yeah.
It signals to the prospect, hey, I didn't care enough to put real thought into this post, so why should you care enough to read it?
Yeah, if you train your audience to expect low-effort visuals, they just stop stopping. They scroll right past.
Spot on.
So, okay, we've optimized your profile to be this high-converting store window. We're using real human expertise. But a great window display doesn't really matter if the street is empty.
You need traffic.
You need traffic. And the data from these past 2 weeks shows you are not going to get that traffic from your corporate company page anymore.
Which kind of brings us to our second major theme, right? The explosive shift toward employee advocacy and creator-led reach.
And the numbers backing up this shift are just staggering.
Mm.
Steph Late and Richard Vanderbloom ran this massive analysis, and they found that only 7% of company pages actually grew last year.
7%. That's bleak.
It is. And Richard pointed out this metric anomaly that tricks a lot of marketers. He saw rising company page impressions, but it was paired with falling engagement.
Oh, so people think the impressions mean they're winning.
Right, but it's actually a death knell. It means the algorithm is serving your corporate noise into the feed, but human beings are actively choosing to ignore it.
Because buyers trust human voices, not logos.
Jamie Pagan actually shared a phenomenal case study from Leadfeeder that proves this. So they built a creator roster of just 10 employees pulling from sales, product, marketing, operations.
Just 10 people.
Just 10. And those 10 individuals now outperform the entire Leadfeeder company page by 20 times.
That is wild.
20 times the reach, just by putting a human face on the expertise.
Yet, despite case studies like that, most companies just fail miserably at this. Anastasia Yashchenko and Jason Casada sort of unpack the autopsy of these failed employee advocacy programs.
Why do they fail so often?
Well, if you're sitting there wondering why your team won't post, it is rarely because they're just lazy. Yashchenko points to a deep fear of sounding cringe in front of their peers.
Oh, I totally get that.
Yeah, and Casada adds that over-controlling marketing departments tend to force these rigid, sanitized scripts down employees' throats. Add in a lack of executives actually leading by example, and, well, the program dies on arrival.
Yeah, Jessica O'Kane echoed that exact sentiment, too. She noted that employees are terrified of being off-brand. They're worried their manager's gonna, you know, pull them into a Zoom call to interrogate them about a post.
Nobody wants that.
No. Yet the data shows personal profiles get 8 times more engagement than the corporate logo. So if you're a marketing director listening right now, how do you manage that tension? Like, how do you keep the brand messaging intact without micromanaging your team into sounding like corporate drones?
It's tough, but you have to fundamentally change your objective. Colin Day framed this perfectly. He said, employee advocacy is not a content distribution strategy.
Okay. What is it?
It is a trust-building strategy. Jason Casada argues the fastest way to kill advocacy is trying to make employees sound like marketing.
Right.
A successful program doesn't ask, how do we get our team to share our latest white paper? It asks, how do we help our engineers and sellers share their own unique expertise?
You provide guardrails, you know, not scripts.
You build brand credibility through the collective, unvarnished knowledge of your people. Exactly. And the platform is literally re-architecting itself to support this exact philosophy. Neil Goyle and Devin Reed highlighted this massive update recently. LinkedIn just launched a creator marketplace directly inside Campaign Manager.
Oh, wow. inside Campaign Manager.
Yes. They are now treating B2B creators and internal industry experts like actual media properties. Mm-hmm. Brands can just search for individual creators by niche, like, say, cybersecurity or B2B SaaS, and partner with them right inside the platform.
That is a huge shift. And we're seeing that same philosophy in the new collaborative posts feature, too, right? The one Cosmina Coman and Marcus Bader were analyzing.
Yeah, the one that allows two distinct authors to share a single post.
Right, effectively cross-pollinating their networks.
They did.
But Cosmina actually offered a very sharp warning about how this will inevitably be ruined by lazy marketers.
Oh, let me guess. A CEO and a company page co-authoring a press release about, like, a minor software update.
Precisely. If you use it to echo boring PR, the algorithm will just bury it. The raw power of collaborative posts is in the network effects of two completely different audiences.
Right, like two human audiences.
Yeah. Imagine a consultant co-authoring a post with a client to share an unfiltered case study, or, you know, a brilliant product engineer co-authoring with a corporate page. It injects human proof into the corporate feed.
Which is exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah. Okay, so let's tie this all together. We have the optimized profile acting as our conversion storefront, right?
Yeah.
And we've got employees and creators driving massive, authentic foot traffic.
The traffic is flowing.
It's flowing. But traffic doesn't make payroll.
No, it does not.
How do sales teams actually capture this attention and turn it into book meetings? That brings us to our final theme, social selling and revenue discipline.
Yeah, this is the missing link for most organizations. Yeah. Because you can generate all the reach in the world, but without the discipline to capture it, you're really just an influencer, not a business.
True.
And the biggest trap here is vanity metrics. Mike Adam and Zaid Syed Ali took direct aim at the social selling index, you know, the SSI score.
Oh, I see people bragging about their SSI scores all the time. Yeah. Hitting a 75 and posting a screenshot.
Yeah, which is wildly misleading. Mike pointed out that SSI is purely an activity metric. It measures how often you connect, engage, and complete your profile.
But it doesn't measure revenue.
Exactly. You can easily click your way to an SSI of 75 and have an entirely empty sales pipeline. The algorithm rewards the activity, sure, but your bank account doesn't. The only KPIs that actually matter are conversations initiated, meetings booked, and deals influenced.
And that requires completely rethinking what good engagement actually looks like.
Yeah.
Miles Craner and Ima Hasicevic explored this heavy tension between virality and intent.
Oh, this was fascinating.
It really was. Ima shared a story about hitting nearly 500,000 impressions on a single post. 500,000 views.
Most marketers would be popping champagne for that.
Oh, absolutely. But if those 500,000 people fall completely outside your ideal customer profile, it's just useless noise. It means absolutely nothing to your pipeline.
Right. Ima and Miles noted that real intent signals are much quieter than like a viral like count.
What do they look like then?
Well, real intent looks like repeat profile views from a director of IT. It looks like a prospect saving your post to reference it later during a vendor evaluation. Or it looks like someone sending your post in a direct message to a colleague.
Which means your content has just penetrated an internal company Slack channel or an email chain.
Exactly.
Disha Shukla actually captured that dynamic perfectly. She wrote, interest is loud, intent is quiet.
Ooh, that's good.
Isn't it? Buyers do not announce that they're ready to purchase with a megaphone. They reveal their readiness through these small, repeated microbehaviors over weeks or even months.
And those microbehaviors actually dictate how the platform distributes your content. Adam Knorr highlighted a metric that LinkedIn doesn't even show on our dashboards.
Dwell time.
Yes, dwell time.
Let's unpack dwell time, because it's basically the invisible engine of the feed. Think about how LinkedIn generates revenue. They sell advertising based on keeping human eyeballs on the screen, right?
Right.
So if someone clicks like on your post in half a second, just keep scrolling, LinkedIn didn't capture any real attention.
Mm-hmm.
But if your post makes a user stop, expand the text, and read for, say, 45 seconds, the algorithm really takes notice.
Which is exactly how Knorr explained it. The algorithm realizes you are holding the buyer's focus, which serves LinkedIn's ad model. So it will distribute a post with high dwell time far more aggressively than a post with 100 rapid-fire likes, but only 3 seconds of actual reading time.
Right. So if we know buyers are quietly reading, saving, and dwelling on our content,
mm-hmm.
what does this mean for the sales rep who's actually tasked with reaching out?
It changes everything.
It does. Because the old playbook for LinkedIn outreach was basically firing a shotgun into a pitch black room. Reps were blasting high volume 200-word direct messages to complete strangers, just aggressively pitching software features.
and burning their territory in the process.
Totally burning it.
The modern approach is much more like tracking footprints in wet cement.
I don't like that.
You monitor those quiet, intent signals, the saves, the dwell time, the profile views, and then you engage with surgical precision. Chris Coslino shared a highly tactical breakdown of this shift. He actually admitted he used to send out these 200-word messages detailing everything his company did.
Let me guess the reply rate.
His reply rate was a dismal 4%.
Yeah, which is pretty standard for the spray and pray method, honestly.
Totally. So he completely tore down his approach and built a 67-word problem-centric framework.
Okay, 67 words. Break that down for me.
It starts with an 8-word pattern interrupt, then a 25-word problem statement, a 15-word explanation of what they actually do, and then a 12-word permission-based call to action. And his reply rate rocketed to 31%.
A 31% reply rate on cold outreach, that is almost unheard of. But let's look at why that works cognitively. The 8-word pattern interrupt, that breaks the buyer's mental schema. They expect a pitch, and you give them something disarming.
Exactly.
And then the 25-word problem statement proves you actually understand their daily friction. You aren't pitching a tool, you're diagnosing a pain.
Yes.
And that 12-word permission-based call to action, you know, asking if they are open to a chat rather than demanding 15 minutes on their calendar, it just lowers their defensive shields.
It respects the buyer's intelligence. And when you combine that tight messaging with the human-led reach we discussed earlier, the compounding effect is massive.
Well, I bet.
Manny McEwen and Anthony Natoli detailed these multi-touch plays that are driving huge pipeline right now. Mandy shared that by combining a strategic profile visit, an email, and a human-sounding LinkedIn DM, they are seeing an 11.87% reply rate.
Because you're manufacturing human familiarity before the pitch ever lands. Like, if I see you looked at my profile on Tuesday, I read your insightful post on Wednesday, and you message me on Thursday, you aren't a stranger anymore.
Right. You're basically acquaintances.
I feel like we already know each other.
Yeah. And Parker Warden actually shared a brilliant 30-second trick to systematically build that familiarity.
Yeah.
Yeah. You find a high-value prospect, you go to their profile, follow them, and you turn on the notification bell for their specific post.
Oh, that's smart.
Right. Every time they publish, you get a ping. You can be the very first person to leave a thoughtful, value-add comment. You do that 3 or 4 times over a month, and suddenly you are a respected peer in their network, not just some random SDR in their inbox.
But the catch to all of this is consistency, right? Okay. Marco Stew offered a very sobering reality check for anyone thinking they can just dabble in this.
Yeah, you can't just dip your toes in.
No. He warned that missing even 2 weeks of consistent social selling allows your pipeline to go completely cold. You cannot treat LinkedIn like a faucet. You only turn on when you're desperate for leads at the end of the quarter.
The algorithm penalizes inconsistency and buyers just forget who you are.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It requires daily operational discipline.
So if we pull all these threads together, the mandate for B2B professionals is pretty clear. Social selling is no longer this isolated, optional tactic for a few charismatic reps.
Right.
It has to be an integrated company motion. Marketing must stop acting as a publisher and start acting as an enabler for employee expertise. Employees have to take ownership of their personal brands and sales teams. They must develop the discipline to read quiet, intense signals and execute that surgical, low-pressure outreach.
It is a complete revenue chain.
Yeah.
It starts with an optimized personal profile that actually converts traffic. It scales through empowered employee voices generating authentic reach. And it closes through hyper-targeted outbound messaging that actually respects the buyer's time.
Beautifully said. And I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, which was actually sparked by an incredible breakdown from Nurin El-Bahari.
Okay, let's hear it.
She analyzed LinkedIn's newest feature rollouts, things like in-platform paid consultations, out-of-network analytics, and this new AI-powered plain English search capability. When you look at the trajectory of these tools, it raises a massive question. Are we witnessing the beginning of the end for the traditional B2B company website?
Wow.
Think about it. If a buyer can research your expertise through AI, verify your trustworthiness through your content, and book a consultation directly through your employee profile, your LinkedIn presence might very soon be your only front door.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel marketing, MarTech, go-to-market, and AI in B2B marketing. Thank you so much for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe.